Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Big Ticket, Variety and iHeart's new film podcast. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. This week, Halle Berry opening up about her early days in Hollywood as a woman of color. Then, her fascination with women's MMA fighting. And then later, Elizabeth Moss revealing the real-life inspiration for her work as a rock star in her latest movie, Her Smell. It's all coming up on The Big Ticket. Stay tuned. Welcome back to The Big Ticket. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Now, Halle Berry. I sat down with the Oscar winner while she was promoting her new movie, John Wick, Chapter 3, Parabellum. Hi, Halle Berry.
Hi.
How are you?
I've got bronchitis, so I'm going to tell you the truth. I've been better.
Oh, no.
I'm happy to be here with you.
Oh, thank you.
I am.
We're not shaking hands.
No.
I'm not giving you a hug.
Fist bumping.
What makes you keep going when you have bronchitis? Why didn't you call me sick?
Work ethic.
Oh, good.
It's my job.
So John Wick 3, how did you get involved with this movie? You get a phone call, they want you for John Wick. What do you say?
No, that's not how it happened at all. I get a phone call from my agent and my manager saying, they're doing a third installment of John Wick. Did you ever see John Wick 1 and 1? I mean, 1 and 2? I said, oh my God, I love it. What do you mean, did I ever see it? Of course I saw it. I love it. They're making a 3? They said, yeah, and there's possibly a role for a badass female. Would you be interested? I said, call up Chad right now and get a meeting for me. I have to be in this movie.
Why do you love John Wick so much?
When I first saw, John Wick 1, what I loved was the world building, the world that was created. I was interested. I was intrigued. And what were these undercover assassins and these markers and this fealty and this, consequences for your action? And where was this world? And who are these people? It was fascinating. But I also loved that the action was so real. It was real live action in the time of CG and, comic book movies. So much of it, wasn't real. And I had been a part of those movies where I did some of the action, but a lot of it was done with a computer for me. But when I saw John Wick and I saw what Keanu and the other performers, what they were doing, I thought, wow, I think he's really doing that. And then I looked at some behind the scenes footage and I saw all the training he went through and I realized, oh, he is. He's really doing this. How amazing. I had so much respect for him and the whole franchise. So when it came to 3, I wanted to do that.
And you hear the bones cracking. Like, it's really every time.
Breaking.
Bones breaking.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, it's a little spoiler alert, but I'm just going to go there. Your battle scene, your fight scene, do you know how many men you killed in that scene?
I do not. I'm sure Chad does.
I tried to keep count last night because I've tried to keep count in the other movies and I never count.
Right.
So I got up to Casablanca. I had about 15 guys had been killed. But as soon as you guys went, it was just literally, I couldn't keep track.
I know. Me either.
And you not only kill them, but you make sure to shoot them in the head, not once, but twice. As I'm told, that's called a double tap.
Yeah, it's called a double tap.
Now, why?
Why?
I'm like, you're point blank right on his head. You have to do it again?
It's the John Wick way.
How much fun is it? Not, it sounds weird, but killing these guys. I mean, it must be fun. Like, you just take that gun and it's just the power.
Well, it's not real. And we're all aware that it's not real. I don't think I could ever really shoot anybody. Which is why I don't have a gun, because they say don't have a gun if you're not going to use it. and I wouldn't use it. So it's make-believe.
Yeah.
It's not real.
And sort of what you were saying before, the fight sequences and the stunts are real, but they're so over the top.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you feel like they're real, but it's like obviously Keanu Reeves, this dude was not going to be able to survive everything that's happened to the poor thing.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not real. It's this surreal, heightened reality, this fantasy world that Chad's created. And so, yeah, the killing is not real, but all of the martial arts, you know, is strung together like a beautiful ballet, like a dance. And like when you're watching a great performance on stage of dancers, it's real, but it's not real. They're creating a world that's also not real for the audience, but the moves that they're performing are real. That's kind of how we look at our as performers in John Wick in this action movie.
And when you're having these fight scenes, not your fight scene in particular, but when they were fighting, what was it, Grand Central Station?
Yeah.
None of the commuters are aware that what's going on.
I know. And that's sort of a, Chad will tell you about that, an homage to one of his favorite filmmakers, where those are the little subtleties that kind of let you know we're not in the real world.
And then I'm like, is this another world that's happening while our world is happening?
It's a good question, right?
It is.
I think we should explore that in John Wick 4.
So John Wick 4, let's talk about John Wick 4 because Sophia has to come back.
Oh, baby. Sophia would have to come back, don't you think?
Yes.
I mean, she's got a story to tell. There's some history between she and Keanu. Mm-hmm. Like something has gone down.
So are you signed for number 4?
I'm not signed, but I would sign. I think we have to get through 3. And if the audience, you know, if they love this like we all love it, and there's demand for 4, I'd be there in a heartbeat.
And those dogs. Let's talk about those German shepherds.
Yeah.
Are they the sweetest things?
Yes and no.
Were you scared of them?
No.
No.
I was never scared of them. I met them. I trained with them for about 6 months, and I met them when they were little, like they're still puppies when I met them. So I kind of grew with them a little bit. They got to know me. I got to know them, and they really revered me as one of their trainers, like the trainer. They just thought I was a trainer. But I had great respect for them because I saw the power, I saw what they could do, and I learned about the Belgian Malinois and what they're built to do. They're, you know, built to be attack dogs. They work with, you know, special forces, special services, and they're built to work. And when these dogs had to sit around and do nothing, that's when it was hard for them. You know, they don't like to sit there and, you know, you scratch their tummy. They really want to work. They want to do something very active.
Did you take them home with you afterwards? I mean, you brought them up as little puppies.
No, my little my labradoodles might be a little jealous. I have 2 Australian labradoodles. No, you know what? Here's a funny thing. Since when I was learning all of my dog training on John Wick, I took those same principles and applied them to my doodles. So I have attack doodles now. I do.
Do you put a harness on them and put guns under them?
No. 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 But I do have 2 doodles that can protect me.
Doodles.
Really, doodles. They got lab in there.
I'm sorry, but if someone's coming after you and you tell a doodle to go attack them, that person's going to laugh.
Okay, you can come to my house and try to attack me, and your ass won't be laughing when you leave. Okay?
It'd be embarrassing.
Your ass is going to be bit up, and you might be without your balls.
Holly Berry just talked about my balls.
Well, you see in the movie, my dogs go for crotch shots.
No, the whole movie goes for crotch shots. You went for crotch shots.
Yeah.
Keanu went for crotch shots, which made me realize, like, in every fight sequence, why don't people go for the men's balls more? Because that's how you really take them down.
It's the real place you go. Because the Wick world is real in that sense. Like, what would you really go for on a man? I mean, I can't think of a weaker spot. Can you?
This is just weird.
Feel a little pain down there, do you, right now?
Yeah, I'm just really uncomfortable. My legs are crossed, and I don't know what to do with myself right now. Do you want your own big action movie, something like this, like Sophia Wick?
If the audiences ask for that, you know, if that's something they think would be interesting to see, I mean, who wouldn't? For sure. I loved getting into the skin of this character and challenging myself the way this character forced me to challenge myself. So, of course.
And now we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, Hallie is opening up about her early days in Hollywood as a woman of color. We're back with more Halle Berry. And now you're going to be directing.
I am. Yeah.
Now let's start from John Wick to Bruised.
I know.
Tell us what Bruised is about.
First and foremost, it's a love story between a mother and a son. But it's also a movie about a female MMA fighter. And it's about a woman at a stage in her life where she is needing desperately a second chance in life. or a last chance, really, in life. And it's got heart, it's got levity, it's got action. Chad is going to be my second unit director, my stunt coordinator.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, how lucky am I?
That's pretty amazing.
Right? It's amazing.
So now, are you starring as the MMA fighter?
I am.
So what made this is the movie that you decided I'm going to make my directorial debut?
I didn't really set out to direct it. I set out to act in it. I read mm-hmm. the script and I loved it. And it was written at that time for a 22-year-old white woman, and which obviously can't be me. But I was able to convince the producers that it should be me and why it would be more relevant in the times in which we're living if it were me. And I talked about all the elements of the filmmaking, what I saw in my head. And they bought it. They thought, wow, makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I set out to find a director. And I met with lots of directors that I respect, some young, some old, new, been here a while. And throughout the process, what I realized was that nobody really saw the story that I saw in my head that I kept talking to the producers about that they loved. So finally, we just sat down one day and they said, why don't you do it? And I thought, I can't direct. This is a big acting role for me. I don't think I should be directing as well. And they gave me so much confidence and helped me realize that, but nobody understands it like you. Mm-hmm. It's storytelling, and we definitely feel confident that you've got the story. And so I put that hat on for a week or so, and I thought about how that felt. And I realized after 25 years in the business, there is a lot I know about filmmaking. And I've never been the kind of actress that just goes to work, stays in my trailer, and says, call me when you're ready. Right. I've always been out, curious, in the world, with the crew, learning. And I thought, if I can surround myself with the best of the best, the Chads, a great DP, a great production designer, I think, yeah. Yeah, I think it's time.
So how much training are you doing to play an MMA fighter?
Well, my training just rolled over from John Wick. I never left training. I've been in training for a year now. And so now the focus of my training is a little different. I don't have to worry about firearms and gun fu and some of the things I do for John Wick. It's now more, Muay Thai, kickboxing, judo, wrestling.
And you're an MMA fan?
I am. Yeah,
like
I am.
Before the movie.
For probably about the last 5 years, as MMA for women has started to emerge, I've always seen it as, it's hard to think about women punching each other. It's not in our DNA. We're not wired that way, really. But when I see women fight, one, I feel empowered to see women, these badass women, like, handling it. And I also love that when I see women fight, we're much more emotional when we fight. And so I always love their fights. For that reason, they're more exciting to me. I have a sense of feeling like anything can happen with a woman because we come from that emotional place.
I love what you just said is it was a 20-something-year-old white woman, but you were able to say, you know what? A not 20-something-year-old white woman should be playing this role. Has that changed? Do you think you would have been able to do something like that back 25 years ago when you started, saying, hey, you see that for a white woman? I think it's for me.
I couldn't even get, I was just the token when I first started. Yeah. I was on a lovely television show where I was just I would start the scenes, hello, everybody, and I would end them, come on, let's go. Like, that was my part. And at the time, I was happy to be there because there weren't places. No, it was a show called Living Dolls.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. At the time, though, as odd as this sounds coming out of my mouth right now, I was kind of happy to be there because women of color weren't really working. So to be sitting here now, realizing that, I was able to create this opportunity for myself, lets me know for sure, it's a new day.
But an African-American woman still hasn't won a Best Actress Oscar since you.
I know. That's
Why?
Heartbreaking. If I had that answer, I would do something about it. Mm. I don't know. And it's not because African-American women aren't turning out performances right. that are worthy, that's for sure. I'm not alone in that, so I don't really know.
And you're working with one of my favorites, Lena Waithe.
Mm, yeah.
Now talk about times have changed.
Times have changed, right?
Black,
yes.
Butch,
I know.
Lesbian. It's amazing.
Isn't it great?
It's unreal.
Yeah.
I sit there as a little gay, I think of myself as a little gay boy, like nothing like that appeared.
Yeah, nothing. And if it appeared, it wasn't empowered
like
she is,
Boomerang. When are we going to see BAPS, the television
series? Oh my God. Do you know, so many people have been asking me that. like?
My friend texted me. He's like, you have to ask her about Babs. I want more Babs.
Oh, I know. I love that movie, too.
It's, would you would you want to do a reboot? See it come back?
No, not me. You know, so, you know, I wasn't so sure about a Boomerang reboot, right. Honestly. I mean, Lena came to me and we talked about it, and my first response was, I don't know about that. And I said, if we can re-envision it in a new way, and it was very much about, for me, not having the old, I'm like, nobody wants to see us come trotting in there. Like, right. That moment has passed. That story is no longer relevant. But if we could frame it with a story that's relevant today and make it make sense, then yeah, let's do it. So this other story emerged. The same thing would be true for Babs, but I just don't think that story would fly. Mm-hmm. Today, I don't know where that, how that could be reinvented, right. Really, and make it make sense.
So, superheroes, you were part of the first, started this
I was.
Whole X-Men, man. And
I was.
Now we have Avengers that's making between 310 million or 340 million opening weekend.
They call that a gabajillion dollars. That's what they call it.
Would you ever want to enter that world again?
You know, never say never. You know, who wouldn't want to enter a world that makes, you know, a bajillion dollars and obviously has so many fans? I mean, I'd be stupid to say no.
Right.
It just feels like right now I'm on a little bit of a different path that I'm really happy to be on.
Because you're doing real fighting. You're not doing CGI fighting.
I know. The realness of it is what I'm really, and nothing against the other. I mean, those words have been good to me. It's just where I'm at right now and what my message is all about, and being of a certain age, it's about dealing with ageism, racism, defying all the rules and telling people none of that matters. You can do exactly what you want to do. You can define who you are. And art, that number that gets tagged to us the day we're born, really has very little to do with who we actually are and, you know, what our capabilities are.
And then two last questions I ask everyone. When was the last time you cried watching a movie?
Oh, I put on movies just to cry.
Oh, you're one of those.
Yeah, because you know what? I think this kept me healthy. Mm. I really do. I think sometimes getting out your pain or, you know, what your angst is really healthy to get it out. So sometimes I put on Kramer versus Kramer or The Notebook or Bridges of Madison County. Oh, that really gets my cry on. And I just let it rip.
Yeah.
And I probably put on Bridges maybe 2 weeks ago. I was looking at it as a director, thinking of a certain part of my movie. So I was doing a little bit of research. And then all of a sudden, it sucked me in. She's in that car holding onto that handle and Clint's in the rain looking like a wet puppy. And I'm like, go, go. And then she starts the voiceover and then the music starts. And then I'm just like, I'm a mess. And I love it. I just love it.
And what's the one movie you can watch over and over again and it never gets old?
I have so many. I'm going to say Terms of Endearment. I'm going to say Terms of Endearment. But I have about 20 I could rattle off.
What?
But I would stick with Terms of Endearment.
She eats her medicine.
I know. And some of my favorite performers are in that movie, which is probably why. Women that inspired my career, that I wildly respect, that I know, that I love. And so that makes me feel really good when I see these. And I always cry. Yeah, I cry.
On that note, thank you.
Thank you very much.
This was awesome. Feel better.
Thank you.
That was Halle Barry. And we'll be back after a quick break with Elizabeth Moss. Welcome back to The Big Ticket. I'm your host, Mark Malkin, now Elizabeth Moss. I caught up with the star of The Handmaid's Tale at South by Southwest earlier this spring, just after the premieres of her latest movies, Us and Her Smell. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I am here with Elizabeth Moss. Not that you really need any introduction, but you know what? I'm going to do a little introduction.
I mean, it is, you know, radio or...
It is, right.
So...
Podcast radio.
The kids call it podcasts now.
Elizabeth Moss originally wanted to be a dancer, but you started acting pretty early on. You made your acting debut when you were only 8 years old on an NBC TV miniseries. And then, of course, she went on to play President Bartlett's daughter on West Wing, Peggy Olson on Mad Men, and June Osborne, of course, Handmaid's Tale. You've won Emmys, Golden Globes, nominated all around the town, and most recently seen in Jordan Peele
what everyone is calling a masterpiece, the new horror masterpiece, Us, and then comes Her Smell. So let's talk about Her Smell.
All right, so that's good. We did it, right?
We did it.
I think that was a great podcast. I think we're done.
Did I leave anything out?
No.
Her Smell, you play a rock star, a riot girl who is just, you know, a total drug addict. And I will say it was tough to watch in a good way.
Yeah.
Because it was so real.
Thank you.
You know, I'm sober myself, so I know all about that stuff.
Yeah.
How did you even prepare to play someone so so addicted, so selfish, so, and as much as they're selfish, they're also very self-aware, if that
makes
sense.
Yeah, it does. There was a lot in the script, so that was my main map, honestly. Mm-hmm. It was all in the script.
Right.
All of that dialogue is scripted. There's no improv, you know, so it was all in the script. I did speak to a sober person who that was extremely helpful. She that was probably the most helpful thing. She was very open. She was very honest with me and really shared some personal stuff. And that really helped with understanding the cycle of the abuse of drugs and just the this feeling that Becky has and that a lot of addicts have, where, you know, you just can't get enough and it's not working anymore, and so you take more, and then that's not working anymore, and so you have to take more. And that's something that was extremely, extremely helpful, the idea of, you know, you've heard the phrase chasing the high, and it really is a real thing. And so that was something that I found extremely helpful and very grateful to her for opening up to me. And then it was just a lot of, you know, I watched a lot of documentaries, not even just, you know, punk or Riot Girl stuff, but like watched, you know, the Amy Winehouse documentary, watched Marilyn Monroe stuff, Kurt Cobain, just anything I could get my hands on to try to understand that scene, the world of drugs, the world of that kind of music, and also just that fame being that very particular type of situation where you're extremely famous, extremely popular, and also you're at your highest sometimes when you're at your lowest, and your lowest when you're at your highest. So, you know, I did a lot of work for quite a few months on it.
How do you, what I think the movie does a really good job in, you know, there are movies like this that sort of almost glamorize, you know, the rock and roll lifestyle and the drugs and the excess and, you know, and then they get sober and all is good.
Right.
You guys avoided that. It was real.
Thank you. Well, one of the things that was really important to us was to establish that, you know, it's not like that.
Right.
You don't go to rehab for 30 days or 28 days and then you're fine and everything's okay and you never do drugs again and everyone's happy. You know, that, and it's not like that. Relationships are ruined. Work life can be ruined. You know, there's a lot of consequences. And I believe that Becky went back to rehab after the movie many more times before she actually was able to get truly sober. So and also there's a part of the film where she's sober, and it was important to me to not have her be all of a sudden this perfect person who was completely stable and had her shit together and was everything was totally fine all of a sudden and all her relationships were back and everything was wonderful. It was important to me that she'd still be on really, really shaky ground, and her sobriety is very new to her and that she doesn't quite have a handle on it yet. And her relationships with her friends, her ex-husband, her child are still extremely damaged from what she did to them. And she's dealing with those consequences, and so as well as the consequences on her career. So that I'm glad that you said that, because it was very important for us to not be like, and now she's sober and everything's fine, and look, she's gonna have like her reunion show and everything's gonna be amazing. Like, no, I think that she, you know, falls off the wagon and has to go back to rehab like six more times, and eventually probably does get sober, but I think it takes a long time, and so that was important to me.
What do you say to people who say this is the Courtney Love story?
I get it, because obviously there's another blonde rock star that's very famous. And there aren't many. So, you know, there aren't many female rock stars. She's also from the same era of music, but that was 100% never my intention or Alex's. If we wanted to make a movie about Courtney, I've met Courtney. Mm. We would have talked to Courtney and made a movie about Courtney and seen if she wanted to do that. But this isn't her story. If anything, Alex based it a lot on Axl Rose. I based it on Becky. I based it on Becky. If anything, I based it more on Kurt Cobain. If anything, I drew more inspiration from that. You know, I think that it was really important to us to have it not be about any specific person, and have her be her own character, because then it gets muddy and it gets, you know, that's just not the story we were telling. I think it would be an interesting story, but it's not the one we were doing. So, I get it, but I think it's a symptom of the fact that, you know, one of the themes of the movie, and one of the things that's very true about grunge and punk and all of that, is that there aren't that many really famous female bands. That's unfortunate. There are some and they're really good, you know, so it's, so I get it, but it's not, I think she would know it's not that.
obviously, the movie does touch on fame and excess. And, you know, when you're famous, you're thrown a lot of things and a lot of people just say yes to you. You just started off in the business young. How did you avoid it?
I was never famous. Mm. Nobody really knew who I was. I had like little teeny bits of something from Girl Interrupted or from West Wing.
Right.
And then Mad Men really kind of changed the game for me a little bit. But by then I was, although it doesn't sound that old, by then I was 23, 24. It's a big difference. Yeah. And so I think I say this a lot, actually, the fact that I wasn't famous at a young age when I wasn't fully formed as an adult, if that ever happens, I think was my saving grace. Mm. You know, I was able to grow up in not in the spotlight. Also, I grew up, I'm the generation that didn't have Instagram, that we didn't have Twitter, we didn't have that kind of thing, like when I was a tween and a teen. I think I had MySpace when like I was 20 22 maybe, you know, so it was like
Friendster.
Oh, I had Friendster. But yeah, we would go to like a web place, you know, to check your
with circles.
Yes, to check your Friendster and check your messages. So I'm very grateful that I did not grow up in that world.
Did you learn to play the guitar, piano? It was your singing. What's your musical background and all
that? Yeah, I can sing, so that luckily was taken care of. But I did have to listen to a lot of music and try to get into the idea.
It's a particular voice.
It's a particular voice, exactly. So I try to kind of get into that. But I did train on the guitar for about 5 months, which is not enough to learn the guitar. My whole family are musicians, so I have a huge amount of respect for it, and I understand that you don't learn how to play the guitar in 5 months. But I learned how to play the songs that I had to play in the movie, or at least look like I was playing them, which was the most important thing. Unfortunately, when you have to look like you're playing them, you end up actually just learning how to play them. But I couldn't play like at the tempo of the actual song. Right. But I can move my fingers and move my hands to the right places.
Right.
You just should probably not plug in an amp because it probably doesn't sound very good. But the piano song I did have to learn because that's like one take.
Right.
And I have to actually play it. Oh, ooh. Thank you. But I learned a super simple version of the song. You know, it's no bells and whistles.
Right.
It is like, could not be more simple because Becky's not a pianist.
Tell us what the song was.
Heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Bryan Adams. But there you go. The movies take place in the 90s, remember, people.
But it's a heartbreaking scene.
Thank you.
So I do have to ask you about Us, of course.
Oh, sure.
I'm not going to give spoilers, but there is a scene where you make noises. See, I can't give spoilers. I don't want
to
give it away.
It's so hard to talk about,
right? It's a really hard movie to talk about because there are movies where you could give spoilers and you don't feel bad.
Right.
Us is the kind of movie, like, you don't want anyone to go in knowing anything,
right? And also the most interesting part about my part in the movie I can't talk about.
Right.
I can only tell you the most boring part.
So basically we're done with talking about
us. That's us. I can talk about the movie in general, right, which I think is, you know, I think it's that definitely, you know, being talked about as a very scary film and a horror film. My experience seeing it for the first time actually last night, and that I've been talking to people about, is that I do, to me, to put it in that genre, to put it in one category is so limiting and is so inaccurate. Yeah. To me, it's almost like more like a Kubrick film or a Tarantino movie, or it's, you know, it's
Hitchcock.
Or Hitchcock, exactly. It's like, how do you categorize that? It's suspenseful.
You don't. I told someone I saw it, and they're like, well, I'm not really a fan of horror movies. I'm like,
then you're fine.
This isn't a horror movie where you're just going to go and just be scared for the sake of being scared.
No.
You're going to walk out, and you're going to be like, what just happened? And I need to see it again.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, I've read the script, was involved in the movie. I need to see the movie again. you know, the themes are so interesting. It's so dense. It's so complicated. Yeah. It's hilarious.
Yep.
It's so funny. Beautifully acted by Lupita and Winston and the kids. And you know, it's beautifully shot. Yeah. It's truly, I think, a masterful work by him. Yeah. And I feel like, and sure, it is really scary. But but to categorize it like that, I think is just so unfair, you know?
So, talking about scary, Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
Which I watch.
Now that's a horror movie.
I watch it when my husband goes to bed because it's too hard for him to watch. So I watch it late at night, which is kind of twisted.
Yeah.
How many seasons could Handmaid's Tale go for?
Gosh, I don't know. I really don't. And we talk about that. We do with that. That's definitely a conversation that you know, the creators of the show and the producers have. I think there is there's more to say. There's definitely more story to tell.
Miller told me that in the new season, June isn't scared anymore.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that her threshold for that world, what she can take, what she can do, what she can see. Oh, they're approaching. What she can see and witness and still survive is gotten so extremely high.
Yeah.
And she has become fearless in a lot of ways. I think as well, she, there's quite the journey, I think, that she makes this season to get to the place where she realizes what she has to do, and what she actually has to accomplish, which we're getting at right now, where we are in the season. Mm-hmm. But there's a real journey that she has to get there, and she kind of has to, sometimes you have to sort of lose yourself and lose your mind a little bit in order to find that genius. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a little bit of what June has to go through. And there's a lot of political versus personal. June has to kind of realize that it's not just about her, and it's not just about Nicole, her daughter, and it's not just about Hannah.
Right.
That there's actually a bigger game to play. And I think that's what we're getting into right now in the season. And it's really fun and really exciting.
And you're smiling so hard right now.
I love it so much. It's so much fun to do. And it's really all consuming. And we've done eight episodes. And the other night I watched, I've seen them, but I watched 1-4 just to kind of get an idea of where we were tonally overall in those first 4 episodes. And I really was so excited about it. And they're so much more complex. They're much deeper. They're very, the relationships are very complicated. There's a certain, there's just a certain complexity in season 3 that I think is really interesting as opposed to 1 and 2. It's this gray, there's a lot of gray areas in the world, and I think that June is you know, dealing with that,
navigating that.
Yeah.
And then last question before you go, West Wing, when are we going to see a reunion?
That's not up to me.
We can do it.
Of course, I would love to. And it's been, you know, I mean, as you know, Brad is on my show now, and I just adore working with him. He's and I always have. He's awesome. So yeah, that's up to smarter people than me.
Maybe
but
you could be president in the reunion.
Oh my God, that would be cool. Right?
Let's do it.
I think Alice Janney should be president.
Oh, yeah. You know what?
I think she should just actually be president, though.
Well, Elizabeth Moss, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You just have so much going on, and I love talking to you, and I wish I could keep talking to you, but I know you have to run.
Same. I kind of want to stay here and talk to you more.
Stay here.
My life is not my own. thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Coming up next week, Keanu Reeves on all that crazy stunt work he's still doing as John Wick, plus his surprise pitch for another Speed movie with Sandra Bullock. All that and more coming up next week on The Big Ticket.